Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In May 2013, the Chicago School Board voted to close 50 public schools, a move that was supported by Mayor Rahm Emanuel. School officials said the closures will consolidate underutilized schools and programs to provide students with the quality 21st century education they need to succeed in the classroom. But a third grader from Marcus Garvey Elementary, one of the schools slated for closing, disagreed with that decision. He was wearing a red t-shirt. 9 years old, Ashwan Johnson climbed up a chair to reach the microphone at a rally, and he shared his thoughts. That is 9-year-old Ashwan Johnson. He continued his fight to keep schools open in Chicago. His school, Marcus Garvey Elementary, is open. He won that fight. Ashwan's story and many others are in the new book, When We Fight, We Win, 21st Century Social Movements and the Activists That Are Transforming Our World. It was co-authored by today's guest, Greg Jobin Leeds, with Ajit Arte. And he writes, same-sex marriage, Black Lives Matter, the Dream Act, the People's Climate, and the new Jim Crow, Occupy Wall Street. Today, ordinary people are taking on extraordinary problems, gaining traction, and making the impossible possible. These movements offer lessons we can learn from. Joining me today to talk about the lessons that work and what hinders transformative social change are three guests. Greg Jobin Leeds is co-chair of the Schott Foundation for Public Education. He is co-author with Ajit Arte of When We Fight, We Win. Greg has helped launch many high-impact social change organizations, and he joins me here in studio. Hi, Greg. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here.
It's great to have you. I love the book and I love the art. It's so inspiring and so beautiful. We're also joined by Julio Salgado. He is co-founder of Dreamers Adrift. Julio's status as an undocumented queer artist and activist has fueled the contents of his visual art, which depict key individuals and moments of the Dream Act movement. Undocumented students and allies across the country have used Julio's beautiful artwork to call attention to the youth-led movement. And Julio is featured in When We Fight, We Win, and he also joins me in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Great to have you. And Noelle Hanrahan is director of Prison Radio. Noelle has worked with the editors of When We Fight, We Win to bring Kevin Rashid Johnson's voice and art to the project. Noelle is currently leading the fight to bring attention to the lack of critical medical treatment for prison radio correspondent Mumia Abul-Jamal. And Noelle joins me in studio. Hi, Noelle. Thank you for coming in.
Hi.
Well, it's great to have all of you. And Greg, congratulations to you and all of the activists who worked on this book. I know it was a collective effort. It is just so beautiful. It is full of posters and art and photographs. What really inspired you to take on this project?
Well, a couple things. One was that I was a teacher for years and educational activist and educational funder. And over the last decade, we've watched, you know, as as that radio clip you played. We've watched as schools have been shuttered, as parents have been demonized, kids have been demonized, teachers have been demonized, and in especially in poor work and working class and communities of color, schools closed, and communities being pushed out through gentrification. And watching this slide, when I started teaching. Well, I'm going to date myself. 35 years ago, 1981, the U.S. was a world leader in high school graduation rates. Today, we're the world leader in jails. Mm. And it just shows the slide of our society. And so I started looking at what are ways that successful movements, people who are getting traction today, how are they going about it, and what have they learned also from the historical movements that have succeeded.
It was really inspiring to read all of their stories and to see this beautiful art. As someone who has worked on so many issues for so long, what was it like for you to spend 5 years talking to these activists?
Well, one of the reasons I'm so excited to be here is because I'm sitting right next to Julio and Noel. And so it's been this tour of just meeting my heroes, you know, these exciting people. And then also we would ask people who we were inspired by for names and suggestions. So I think it was actually Adrienne Marie Brown who first got us in touch with Julio and then Gibran did, and Gibran Rivera. So it's just been amazing to be in the midst, to hear the stories, to capture them, to capture the art. And it's just been a great process. And then also on the book tour, as you know, we'll talk a little bit about that, about we're going to be tonight in Oakland and tomorrow night in Marin and Tuesday in San Francisco. But at each of the events, we get to meet a lot of the activists, some who are not in the book, but who through these expanding networks give us a feel of this huge movement. Antonia Dardair, when we were in L.A., she writes the afterword in the book. She talked about the book is really just the tip of the iceberg, and that below the water, below the surface, are probably other stories and other art that it could be even much more important and even more powerful, but that we haven't even discovered it yet. And so all we've done is unearth the tip of the iceberg. But as we go on tour, we're getting a sense of this huge iceberg.
And Julio, you are co-founder of Dreamers Adrift. Tell us about Dreamers Adrift.
Right. Once again, thank you for having us here. So Dreamers Adrift is a little media project that a couple of us started right after college back in 2010. We just graduated from college, we're undocumented, and we wanted to sort of put the narrative out there that the mainstream media wasn't putting out. In 2010, it was a really important year for undocumented students specifically. There was a lot of action, sit-ins, you know, to push for the Dream Act, which would have given us a path to citizenship if you went to college or joined the army, which, you know, I wasn't a fan of that. But, you know, we had just graduated from college, so we're like, okay, let's do this. What we did with Dreamers Adrift was use art and music and other types of narratives to really explore what it meant to be undocumented. Like, it's not just, you know, you graduate from college and that's it, or there's this sort of good immigrant, bad immigrant narrative. We wanted to make sure to showcase our, you know, the different dimensions that it means to be an immigrant in this country. So that's where that project came about. And then we started some series called Undocumented and Awkward through Dreamers Adrift, because it's really awkward to tell people that you're undocumented while you're 25 and you have a driver's license. So using humor was another tool for us to deal with the issue of being, you know, an undocumented immigrant. It's really easy to sort of like put out the victimizing stories because it's really hard to be in this position. But we really wanted to combat that narrative with humor. And so that's what the Dreamers Adrift project came about.
And I assume that it's become harder with all of the racist talk, the ugly talk that we're getting from these presidential candidates and then in the media.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous that, you know, we you know, those things are still part of that, you know, of the conversation with presidential candidates. But, you know, I think that you know, again, I want to focus on the humor part because mm-hmm. we just have to make fun of that. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous how, you know, that there's talk that, you know, oh, these people are bringing, you know, crime and drugs and all these things into this country. When in reality, it's like, you know, they don't show the whole picture. And so for me, that's hilarious. For me, that's funny. And I'm old enough to laugh about it. I know that we are in a critical situation and it's really hard to sort of use humor for certain topics like that. But as a somebody who's dealt with that, you know, for over half of my life, I find humor to be very...
And you guys, you just have to follow him on Facebook, okay? So I repost some of his stuff because he told this story last week about his mom and about you getting arrested. It made me cry. It was so funny. So we need to have levity in our lives as well as we fight the power, you know? And Julio's got it down. So
And I think, like, you know, the importance of this book and you know, how as activists, a lot of the times... you know, in art, it's the one thing that you can find the room to make this, to do this, to, you know, I can't go to Univision and try to be funny about it. They will only give me like 2 minutes to talk. But you have YouTube, you have art, you have all these things that allows us, you know, to, you know, talk about some of these issues. And I'm this is like the book is, I feel like it's a homage to all these artists that are doing this work. And I'm really, really honored to be part of that.
And what was it like for you when you first saw the book and kind of looked at all these different movements and looked at the work that they're doing, the successful work that they're doing?
Yeah, well, first I saw, I was like, oh my God, that's my friend right there. Like, it's so amazing to see folks that I've met, you know, in the past couple of years. And the fact that it was in color, we were talking about it last night, that, you know, this you know, colorful book. And I mean, it's just, I didn't have the words for it. It was so impactful. I'm hoping that whoever, you know, when people get to see this book, and not just see the images, but like see the people that create the image. A lot of times we just see these images pop up out, you know, right, everywhere. And I'm glad that there's some stories that, you know, that we got an opportunity to sort of explain some of the images behind a lot of the work. So that's really dope.
That is Julio Salgado. He is co-founder of Dreamers Adrift, and he is featured. His work is featured in the book When We Fight, We Win: 21st Century Social Movements and the Activists That Are Transforming Our World. Greg Jobin Leeds worked on this book with activists at Agit Arte, and Noelle Hanrahan is also featured in the book. Noelle is director of Prison Radio, and I'm sure a lot of us have heard segments from Prison Radio. How long have you been working on prison issues? And I'm sure, what is it like for you to see prison issues now get so much attention?
It's really important that prison issues get attention because it affects everything. And one of the amazing parts of being with all these artists, and the book covers a variety of issues like climate change and just an amazing amount. But every single issue, it seemed like, comes back in part to incarceration or ICE detention or the ways in which the society is warehousing so many people. So Prison Radio has been up and running for 25 years. I feel like a frog in the pot of boiling water because the changes that have happened in this last 25 years, we've gone from 200,000 people in prison to over 3.2 million. You know, we have a really huge incarceration problem. 1 in 46 people in the United States will do time in their lifetime. And I love this book in ways that are just so deep because it shows us how we can resist and how we have to change things and what the future is going to be like. Greg and the other editors privileged prisoners' voices, and that was really important to me. So Prison Radio is part of the book by bringing the artwork and the interview with Kevin Rashid Johnson into play. So that is the featured piece from Prison Radio. Kevin Rashid Johnson is an amazing artist who's locked in a prison in Amarillo, Texas. He's been transferred from Virginia and then through Oregon to Texas to isolate him, to keep his artwork, to keep his work and his writings from us. Prison Radio has really made an effort to reach inside and to make sure that we hear the voices, the primary first-person voices of prisoners that have to be part of the debate. One, to humanize prisoners and to honor the experience that so many of us are experiencing of incarceration, and then also to bring change. You know, I think if people hear from people inside without the filters, without the talking heads, if we hear from immigrant detainees, if we can hear from people in those institutions, it's going to make change in a way that's really significant. So I'm very proud that you guys included prisoners and care so much about imprisonment issues in the book.
In this interview with Kevin Rashid Johnson, he says art makes knowledge accessible across boundaries of status, race, gender, location, and nationality. Can you elaborate on what you just said about that they're trying to keep his art from you?
Oh, I think it's absolutely clear that in every case, the prison officials, and he says this in the interview, you guys got to get the book. He says it in the interview, they understand what it means for artists to be able to communicate. And so they take away their colored pencils and their pencils. He didn't get colored pencils until 6 months ago. He didn't get a typewriter until 2 months ago. I mean, they have locked him so far down. He's had three visits in the last 5 years in Amarillo, Texas.
He's been in solitary confinement for 17 years. So for 23 hours a day, not seeing a single other person. And so when we do the interview with him, everybody else, you know, with Julio, we were either on the phone or in person. But with him, we have to mail him the questions, and then he writes us back the answers in pencil. And they were absolutely brilliant. And so this whole idea of humanizing, because the whole concept of prisoners, the image of they're criminals, right? And criminals are bad. Criminals are less than human. That is kind of this image, as opposed to, you know, as we know, especially now that we have the cameras on all our phones, and we can see how many people have been put behind bars who are not criminals, and then also even people who have, you know, done something, but they did it because they were also black, but they go to jail because they're black, right? If my son or my daughter is buying pot or selling pot, they're not going to go to jail likely. But if they're brown and doing the same thing, then they're going to go to jail. And so there's this criminalization of so much of our society. And so when Noel says that the prison movement touches all the movements, it's I think it'd be worth really diving into that for a second, because I mean we could actually do that with any one of the movements. We could do that with the immigration movement. We could do that with the climate movement, the economic justice movement, the LGBTQ movement. But the prison one is that there is this there is this both threat that we all live in, that we could end up in jail, and then it's also a way that our economy has shifted, that we're warehousing tons of people, but it also speaks to the racism, or as many of my friends of color push me to say, the white supremacy, that says that these people are of less value than whites are, right? White is the norm, and so we end up criminalizing so many black and brown people.
And I just want to, I mean, go back to the point where, you know, he mentioned about the fact that people in charge are aware of the power of art and the power of writing. One of the images in the book is from the project that Culture Strike did, Visions from the Inside, where we illustrated letters from folks in detention. When guards were aware that people were writing letters and sending them out there through their lawyers, they started banning, you know, people writing letters. So it's just ridiculous how... It's ridiculous, and it shows to, like, the power of you know, that people inside, and it's super important. Yes, I love the fact that, you know, the people that are dealing with these issues are the ones whose voice we need to hear. I always talk to my artist friends and like to call it the fact that we are not giving them a voice. We are just a tool to highlight a voice, because they already have a voice. We already have a voice. It's just that some people rather, you know, not listen. And so I think that's super powerful what he said about, you know.
You're the arts project coordinator at Culture Strike.
Yes.
And that empowers artists, according to your website, Dreaming Big, Disrupting the Status Quo. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so Culture Strike was founded by Bay Area artist Fabiana Rodriguez, also in the book. Telling all my friends are in my book, in the book.
When we fight, we win.
When we fight, we win, yes. And we started the organization in 2011 as a way to get artists together and sort of you know, fight back the anti-migrant narrative that was, you know, that was happening because of this anti-migrant laws that were popping up everywhere. SB 1070 was happening, and so artists got together and you know, we were like, we need to be part of the conversation, not just be called upon when you need a poster when there's a campaign and they're like, hey, we need a poster, come and drive for us. But we wanted to make sure that you know, that artists are also part of the conversation, because we have ideas. We have, you know, different ways to not, it's not just about, you know, sitting in front of a crowd and, you know, talking to people, but also, you know, thinking of different ways to show, you know, to highlight what's happening. And so Fabiana tapped me and she's like, you need to come and, you know, move to the Bay Area. I moved from LA. I grew up in there. And I've been with Culture Shriver since then. And projects like Visions from the Inside are really, I think are really exciting because of that collaboration with folks who are, again, seen as not having a voice. Mm. And so,
And I think it's so critical, both the idea of getting artists and prisoners' voices out there, because a lot of our language is stale, and you know we're using terms that don't necessarily invite other people into the conversation. And so, you know, I think about Fabiana Rodriguez's both story and art that's in When We Fight, We Win, and she, you know, so we. She talks about this was at while we were at the climate march. I marched with her and with Julio and the in New York, and she talked about the extractive economy and this economy where we're extracting as much from each person and from the earth without any cost, or she called it the rape and take culture versus the generative, which you're generating a creative economy where things are nurturing and giving, and you know, and I thought they had this huge Mother Earth puppet, this which is on the back of When We Fight, We Win, and they which was became the symbol of the largest climate march in U.S. history. But the Fabiana and Julio and Rashid behind bars, they give us new voices and new ideas that are so key. And so I think artists, because they both either can use a mask or the paintbrush or the pencil, can bring out new ideas that make it incredibly fresh and ways of seeing, in a lot of ways, the absurdity of the reality of today.
And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Today, we are talking about social movements, the role that artists play, what it takes to be successful. And if you have any questions for our guests about these issues, we'd love to hear from you. We did a show last week about how artists are being pushed out of not only San Francisco, but the entire Bay Area this time around because of high rents. And we were talking about the importance of art. That show actually turned into a show about the fact that there's just not much affordable housing. And so I'm glad today we're talking more about the role that art plays in social movements. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think is successful? And then also, it does seem like so many more people are drawing connections between all of these different movements, the Fight for 15, the Dreamers, Black Lives Matter, the environmental movement. I'm hoping that there's going to be more of a connection with the reproductive rights movement also. So if you have any questions about that, comments, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Greg, we're going to go to break in a minute, but you talk to so many people working on different issues. They are definitely connected. But when you walked away, what was the main thread?
It's hard to reduce it to the main thread, yeah. but certainly that all the movements are so interconnected. And I think that's the power of today, which is everybody is seeing it. So whether you're in the housing struggle, you're in the immigrant struggle, it's they all are woven together. And that there's people are rising up. And when we were on the show Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, you know, she talked about the book documenting the growing resistance movement for justice in this country. But they are all woven together. And so I guess that would be my single most important takeaway. And after the break, I can give you a few more.
All right. What would you add to that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. There's no doubt that all this issues are interconnected in one way or another. I mean, I myself, I'm undocumented, I'm queer, and those two things are super connected, you know, and I think there's been a more, you know, recent push to showcase that. You know, there was a recent convening of Black undocumented migrants in Florida, and so I think it's important to showcase what those connections are.
And they get connected, I think, because they all go to the root of the problems. And so when you go to the root, you can see those connections.
You know, and Greg really mined for people's underlying depth. Like it goes deep, this book as well, because it talks about not exceptionalizing and the media not making an icon out of something, but talking about how the community as a whole is able to create justice. So there's the foreword talks about how the revisionist history says that it was individual heroes who made struggles happen. But all of the work throughout this book shows that it's a community-led kind of process. And the media doesn't privilege those voices, doesn't privilege those wins. And this book really privileges the wins. Mm.
And this was a collective effort, too. So, you know, it was Agitarte de Hernandez curated the art. She found all these artists. Jorge Diaz led the artist interviews. And so this was a real team effort. Antonio Darder and Rinku Sen, it just have all been part of it. And then, let alone, once we actually wrote the book, we then put it up on a Google Doc. And folks in the book could edit it and feedback. And so actually that added in things we were missing and updated. And so it was a very collective effort.
Greg Jobin-Leeds is co-author of When We Fight, We Win, 21st Century Social Movements and the Activists That Are Transforming Our World. Julio Salgado is co-founder of Dreamers Adrift. And Noel Hanrahan is the director of Prison Radio. Today, we are talking about social movements, successful movements, transforming our world and fighting for real change. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, local public radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Stay with us here on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will be discussing media coverage of the Super Bowl. San Francisco city officials and Mayor Ed Lee have come under fire for spending $5 million on NFL festivities while pushing homeless people out of the downtown area. There was a protest downtown yesterday. The national media have actually been covering this. The Wall Street Journal and Reuters have been writing stories about the haves and the have-nots in San Francisco. We will also discuss coverage of the presidential election. Now that Senator Bernie Sanders is getting more national attention, how are reporters covering his key issues like Wall Street, inequality, and taxes? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about successful social movements. There's so much happening right now. We've got the Fight for 15, the Dreamers Act, the People's Climate March, Black Lives Matter. There's so many things going on, ordinary people taking on extraordinary problems. What really strikes you about today's movements and the activists who are resisting and fighting for change? What strikes you about today's movements? We always do shows on about history today on this show, but what differences do you see between what movements are dealing with today, movements back in the 60s? What about the activism that you're seeing? If you're part of a movement, we'd love to hear from you. What really inspires you to get involved? And what do you think is successful? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Greg Jobin-Leeds, co-author of When We Fight, We Win. He worked on the book with Agitarte. Julio Salgado is co-founder of Dreamers Adrift, and Noel Hanrahan is director of Prison Radio. And Greg will be with a number of activists at several upcoming events. Tonight at Marcus Books in Oakland at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow night, Book Passage in Corte Madera at 7 o'clock. And Tuesday, Green Apple Books in San Francisco at 7:30. Right, Greg?
You got it.
Okay, good. And if you'd like to join us, 866-798-8255.
And Agitarte will be there. Jorge Diaz and De Hernandez. They're going to do this incredible quilt storytelling, little piece of theater and song. And so it'll be that one. That will be the one consistent thing that will happen each of the nights. But each of the nights there'll be different stories. So you can come to all three if you want.
Okay, great. And we just had a call about the events, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org.
You can also go to When We Fight, We Win if you'd like. WhenWeFightWeWin.com.
Okay, perfect. So let's talk about some stories, because you have so many great movement stories in the book, and you open it with the LGBTQ movement talking about the Stonewall Rebellion and the ACT UP organizing. So much has changed in a short amount of time on this issue.
Yeah, and Stonewall is it's a great story, because the Stonewall is a anti-police brutality movement, riot, event, where trans activists, mostly drag queens, women of color, men of color, working class folks in a bar in New York. There's an uprising because they get tired of the police harassment. So it's kind of inspiring when you think about, you know, where that movement has come and where Black Lives Matter is today, because one could imagine possibly Black Lives Matter being today where the LGBTQ movement is. And so a lot of people point to that moment as when a queer stood up and really and fought back. And, you know, it gets back to our title, When We Fight, We Win.
Yeah, and I think it's super important that we are looking back and making sure that the stories are being told right, because, you know, Hollywood recently released the Stonewall movie, which was super whitewashed, not the right story, not putting the main people who were at the forefront. You know, there's a movie coming up, Happy Birthday, Marsha, that. You know, I think it tells a better story by Reina Cossette, who's in one of the photos, yeah, in the book,
and who I met finally.
Yeah, and change, yeah, exactly. And so she and I think it just goes again to show why it's important to sort of talk to the people who are being directly affected by it, because I don't know who Hollywood talked to to make that movie, and a lot of people got mad because, you know, the story, there's people who are alive who were, you know, then and there at that time, and so we need to talk to the people who were there, not just an ideal you know, whatever you think that gay people should be.
Tell the Marsha P. Johnson story. Do you know it at all?
Do I know? Well, Marsha was she was at the forefront. She was one of the trans women who threw the first stone. I believe that's the story, and it was just funny because you know, like one of the biggest you know, goals was, you know, from Marsha and Sylvia Rivera, another important figure at that time, was to make sure, and we hear people of color struggle, which is, you know, homelessness, and you had all this, you know, sort of like white gay people who were like, no, we need to look a certain way so that, you know, we are not, you know, people don't think of us in as different, which is not much different from what's happening now when you hear about marriage equality, and a lot of us undocumented queers are kind of like, well, that's important, but there's people getting deported. There's, you know, there's, you know, homelessness, you know, trans women are getting killed. And so I think that conversation is still real. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Hollywood took it upon themselves to say, you know what, we're going to ignore those stories that are happening now and create this fictional story that does not at all tell the real story of what happened in Stonewall. So art is important.
Well, and speaking of art, there is a banner in the book, When We Fight, We Win. It's a photo of a banner that you painted, Julio. And it says, don't stop at marriage. Queers are being deported.
Yeah. So that banner we made, it was, you know, right after DOMA got repealed, and there was a big celebration in San Francisco.
DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act.
Yeah, it was you know, and so there was a big festivities happening here in San Francisco. That picture is from Pride of 2013, I believe, or 2012.
2013,
yeah. And we sort of like infiltrated the parade, and it's not to rain on their parade, literally, but it was just a reminder that, hey, that's great. Let's celebrate this moment that, you know, we can all get married, but let's not forget. Let's not stop there. Let's, you know, talk about the folks who are still in detention and make sure that those stories are heard. And so that was kind of the idea behind that. And some people were not happy that we were there kind of
you
it's a movement. It's not a market. You know, the march is not a market.
What gets me the most is when you go to events like Pride and you bring up these issues. You know, when I see a Wells Fargo, you know, truck. And I'm like, you know what? You know, screw that, you know, place. And they're like, this is not the place to be political. And I'm like, are you serious?
Where were we 20 years ago?
It pisses me off. And I'm just like, and all of a sudden I become the bitter gay person bringing these things up. But it's like, because that's my personal experience and because that's what I'm dealing with, you know, a lot of people are very detached from it. Like, well, we got to get married. You know, we're done.
Oh, you know, or they want us to say, don't ask, don't tell, or be part of the military. But what do we really need is like a gay person on every school board.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need. There are things we need and there are things we don't need.
Yeah. So that's the story behind the banner.
Well, we have a few callers on the line. So let's hear from Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Go ahead.
Well, I was in the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement in the 60s, and you asked what was sort of maybe a difference. I think is that for whatever reason, the media has done a pretty good job of muffling a lot of the actual footage of the wars that we are in now. And I think that there's a sort of similar fog over the civil rights movement, partly because of the consolidation, I guess, of the media. But I think it's harder for younger people these days. We were somewhat fortunate in that we had very strong polarities. You were either for or against the Vietnam War, or you were either for or kind of against civil rights. There are many different splinters, as there always are on the left. But I think one of the things I look to for artists is to help sort of bring up imagery, icons, and imagery for us to be able to unify around. I think the left is always, by nature, internally fragmented to some degree because we're the ones who are kind of moving the culture forward. And I think it's hard because that's who we are, to stay united. So that's how I would like to hear the artists speak about that role.
Julio?
Well, I feel very fortunate to be living in an era with the phones. I mean, it's fortunate. It's like a curse and a gift at the same time. I mean, you know, there's so many times where police brutality has been caught on video because people have these things nowadays, cell phone I'm holding on my cell phone, and that in the past would not have been possible or would have been hidden by the media. But we also have this tools to showcase other ideas. I mentioned the things that I've done with the webisode with Dreamer Should Drift. You know, now we don't have to wait for somebody else to tell us, can you want to tell your own story? Like, here's a platform. Like, there are platforms, so we don't have to ask for permission. And so I feel very lucky that we have those things at our hands now. Definitely, you know, in the left, yeah, there's a lot of divides in different ways that we want to look into things, but I think it's a good conversations. Those are good conversations that happen.
Noelle?
You know, one of the things I think deeply about when I read the book and when I kind of muse on its messages is that we are winning. You know, that there's this level of change that's happening quickly. The media will never privilege it our potential to win. Like, Bernie's an example of that. Man, that's a pretty big deal, Iowa. But also, we really are changing the culture. We are the tide that's moving across, and it's happening, and this book really gives you a lot of enthusiasm for it. And the work is hard. It's not easy. But we are winning.
Right.
So, Noelle, because it seems to me like today also we have the interconnection. Actually, I would say we're in a lot of ways much more unified as the stories and each of the folks in the book talk about, and that there is this convergence of all the different movements and the issues. But at the same time, there is, as you said, there's somewhere between 2.5 and 3 million U.S. prisoners. And so that reality is getting so much worse, right? So how do you juxtapose the we're winning while at the same time our housing, you know, we're getting displaced from housing. So many neighborhoods that were there just 5 years ago are gone.
There are some times when I use platitudes for myself and others. But they're helpful in a certain way because they do reflect a reality. When the state is most vulnerable is when they are most dangerous and when they are most aggressive. And there is a tide turning in terms of mass incarceration and the consciousness of that we're spending money on mass incarceration, not preschools, that we are making every single line item in every single budget, state, locally, and nationally, is completely determined by how much money they're spending on prisons or how much they're spending on deportations. So it's connected in that very clear way, but the reality is we are winning. The California hunger strike of prisoners was a massive effort. There are going to be, you know, the culture is going to implode probably like Rome unless it fixes a few problems, one being mass incarceration. You know, it has to in order for it to survive. And I believe in the power of people coming together to change it. Yes, we're at a critical moment where the state is fighting very hard and they are making us pay a huge price for being on the front lines. But that doesn't mean we're not winning.
And activists have done so much work to bring out the voices of prisoners in solitary confinement, especially on this issue. The New Yorker had that horrific story about, can you help me with his name? The young boy who was in solitary and then got out and ended up killing himself.
They said accused him of stealing a backpack?
Yes.
Yeah.
4 years in pretrial detention.
Yeah,
4 years.
I'll find that name. But that story got so much attention and activists have done so much to raise awareness about solitary confinement. And I haven't done my reading on this, but last week, I believe it was, President Obama said he was ban solitary for juveniles. I don't even know if most people realize that juveniles are in solitary, but activists are doing so much to raise awareness about that. So what about this? I mean, were politicians even talking about solitary confinement just a few years ago?
You know, politicians are going to move really slowly until the people push them.
Right.
Okay? So they're going to move if we push. And they're not going to move if we don't push. Like you were speaking to us before the show about Hillary's positions going far lefter than I'm sure her little head can imagine handling. Because, you know, she is just like appearing as a populist. It's like ridiculous. So I think that it is really important that we know that popular struggles are going to really take it on.
And the name is, and I really want to say his name, Kalief Browder. He was held at Rikers for 3 years, and he spent many months in solitary confinement. And then when he got out, his mom said, I'll never forget this image, that he would walk along the driveway, all four corners of the driveway, just walk all day. And he killed himself.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is, you know, both my parents escaped Nazi Germany, and that was one of the other motivators for me writing this book and just being in the movement work in general. But my mother was a refugee two times before the age of 11. My father was the last Jew in his high school in Hamburg, Germany. This is in the 1930s. And in the late 30s, the concentration camps had begun, but Jews could still get out then. They hadn't become the death camps. And so my parents don't know the death camp, the 1940s experience, but they know that period really well. And one of the things my mother said when she came back, she came after she had read the prison chapter of the book, and she almost looked a little mad at me when she came when I saw her, and she said, "I read your lovely prison chapter," and she said it reminded her of Jews who came back from the concentration camps totally traumatized. And so this story you're telling now about the Rikers Island, and Rashid's art in the book is incredible, where he talks about, you know, nobody comes out the same. You know, some people come out more politicized. Many people come out destroyed. And so, but my mother talked about the relatives who would just come back destroyed from this experience, and how it just seems so much the same as in the prison chapter. And the other reason why I think, you know, when Noel says, and still it's haunting me, you said earlier in this interview about all the stories, all the movements connect to incarceration, the prisons. And it does, because that is the ultimate form of fascism, is inside prisons, right? There is no, you know, you've been dehumanized, you're the evil, and the guards have all the power, and the society has all the power. And so it's the early parts of it's a clear part of this fascist state that, you know, Noel talks about, where, you know, Occupy Wall Street is in downtown Manhattan, and they're brutally evicted. It's the police, and it was interesting because the activists there talked about at Occupy Wall Street made the connection between their own, the police brutality against them to what was happening in Harlem, and so there were the connections began to happen in a beautiful way.
I just want to mention another drawing in this book, When We Fight, We Win, by Susan Wilmarth. Prisoners of a Hard Life, Women and Their Children. One out of every 109 women in America is incarcerated on parole or probation. 150,000 women are in jail or in prison. And in this drawing, there are faces of women along with some facts. Most women entering prison have been convicted of nonviolent crimes. Almost half of the women entering prison in 2000 were serving time for drug sentences. Noelle, what about this? Because we're seeing the numbers of women in prison also increase. And California used to have the largest women's prison, and now it's Florida. The Miami Herald did an amazing expose in December. It didn't get much media attention, but it was about the sexual abuse of women behind bars. And in some cases, in order to get something like toilet paper, you have to do things with the guards. I mean, it was a horrific article, but exposed so much, and things are changing now in Florida.
In terms of women in prison, like African-American women are the most intensely targeted population for women in prison. It's really important that, you know, most women in prison have children. You know, it's very important that we really focus on it, especially because we have such huge prisons here for women. And also there are serious, serious issues in terms of juvenile lifers and women juvenile lifers and women on death row. So I think that those voices need to be privileged, need to be spoken of, need to be, if we go inside as journalists, like there are connections to every story. And so prisoners' voices can be part of every story. And journalists need to be continually reminded to make the effort to get those first person voices in there. You know, Prison Radio is one of our first recordings in 1992. We recorded Joanne Walker in Chowchilla State Prison, an African-American activist around AIDS. She had AIDS. She was in prison for stealing a $400 jacket. You know, she died 3 days after being released on compassionate release. So she was only guilty of property crimes, and she was an AIDS activist inside. You know, she said there's no AIDS education inside. There's if there's drug use inside, there's no education about it. So it also leads to other medical health issues. Prison walls do not stop, you know, things happening that come and affect everybody. 98% of the people in prison are actually going to return to the community, whether it's mental health issues from the PTSD to tuberculosis or hepatitis C.
Yeah, will you tell about
AIDS.
The hepatitis C?
Right now, Prison Radio is working on a very important story that has not yet broken nationally. Hepatitis C is the most infectious disease in America. 3.2 million people have it. One of seven African-American men have hepatitis C, and it's completely 100% curable, 95% curable with a new drug that's just on the market since 2013. Prisoners, there's 500,000 prisoners in prison right now who are not getting access to that care, and 20% of the people in Pennsylvania prisons have hepatitis C. Mumia Abu-Jamal, our main correspondent, the most prolific person we've worked with for now 22 years, has hepatitis C.
Probably the most famous political prisoner in the U.S. Yeah.
And he nearly died in March. I was sleeping on the ICU floor while Mumia Abu-Jamal was in renal failure and nearly died. And we have been motivating this campaign for the last year to get Pennsylvania prisoners access to the cure.
So it's Gilead Pharmaceutical bought the patent from the doctor who first invented it, and it's 100% or 99% effective. But and what, 17% of prisoners have it. 1 in 7 African American men have it. It's much more contagious than AIDS. More people are dying because of it. And Gilead is charging $1,000 a pill, and you need to take it once a week for 12 weeks. Am I getting it right?
12 weeks. Yep.
And so it costs about $80,000, and so the prisoners are not getting it. Many other people are not getting it. And then I don't know if you heard. Anyway, so it's just this huge scandal of, you know, here are many people who are behind bars who don't shouldn't be behind bars, period, or behind bars because they're brown or political, and but they are black. And but then Gilead, I'm not sure you knew, they were what the one of the major sponsors of the Creating Change Conference in Chicago. Creating Change is the largest LGBTQ conference. We were just at it, and Jorge, our co-author, caught this. But, you know, and Ray Carey's, who's head of the – and I got to ask her about it because she's – her story's in the LGBTQ chapter. And
oh, they're just using the gay community to try and buy acceptability. Well, we've got to stop that. They're based in Foster City. You know, other countries and other communities have forced Gilead to cut the prices. So Egypt went to them and told them, we're not accepting your intellectual property rights. We – need you to come here, build the factories, and treat our entire community. And they did. They came and they lowered the price. Same with India. And so we have the opportunity to make this drug accessible. It's a public health imperative for everyone. Prisoners are just the canary in the coal mine for this story. And our political prisoner, our main correspondent, Mumia Abu-Jamal's life is in danger. He has not received treatment yet. We were in federal court in December. We are going to force the Department of Corrections to change their policy. They have a policy, you know, after the American Liver Association told them they couldn't use interferon, they stopped treating anyone in for 22 months, or now 26 months. They have not treated anyone inside Pennsylvania prisons. What that means is they are just sitting there watching them die. This is medical apartheid. You know, this is akin to slavery. This is the possession of black bodies and the will to do whatever they want with them. So we are not going to let that happen. We're going to put the white hot spotlight on the situation, and we're gonna actually win.
And Mumia was in the infirmary when he reads "When We Fight, We Win." And so he reads it, and it took a little while to get the review. So his comments are not on the back cover, but you can go on our website. It opens up with Mumia's voice reading his review of the book, which is just incredibly powerful. And so you know, if listeners do nothing else besides come to our events tonight at Marcus Books, and tomorrow night at both of them at 7 in Corte Madera at Book Passage, and on Tuesday at Green Apple Books. If they do nothing else, go to Prison Radio and help out, because this is an incredibly important moment, and you know we can help save lives. And anyway, it's very powerful and very important.
Greg Jobin-Leeds is co-author with Ahit Arte of When We Fight, We Win, 21st Century Social Movements and the Activists That Are Transforming Our World. Noelle Hanrahan is director of Prison Radio. She worked with the editors of When We Fight, We Win to bring Kevin Rashid Johnson's voice and art to the project. And Julio Salgado is co-founder of Dreamers Adrift. His work is also featured in the book, and he works with undocumented students and allies across the country. They use his artwork to call attention to the youth-led movement. Again, When We Fight, We Win is hosting events tonight at Marcus Books in Oakland, 7 o'clock. Tomorrow night, Book Passage in Corte Madera, 7 o'clock. And Tuesday, Green Apple Books in San Francisco at 7:30. Greg, Julio, and Noel, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks so much. This is really fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the Super Bowl. San Francisco city officials and Mayor Ed Lee are under fire for spending $5 million on NFL festivities while pushing homeless people out of the downtown area. We'll also discuss coverage of the presidential election. Now that Senator Bernie Sanders is getting more national attention, how are reporters covering his key campaign issues, including Wall Street, inequality, and taxes? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.